All right, we'll stop the start at the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis with Rav Papa. So we're talking about Ketubat Benin Dichrin. How does it work? Why the Gzeira was established for the Ksuba for male children? And the Gemara went through a number of iterations. Why can't we do it this way? Can't do it that way. The conclusion of the Gemara was that, first of all, it functions like Yerusha, number one. Number two is that unless there is a De'oraisa Yerusha there, we don't allow the Ketubat Benin Dichrin to work or to function unless we are enough money left over from between the two Ketubot that we can actually divide it up al pi Torah. And today we're going to just deal with a little story about that. So Rav Papa Yasek Le'Lebrei, right? He was helping make a shidduch for his son. Right, Bei Abasuro. He went to the house of Bei Abasuro. So this is interesting, which is that Abasuro was his father-in-law, right? And then Rav Papa went ahead and was trying to raid a shidduch between his son and his sister-in-law, meaning that his aunt and the son were. When it says here that Bikul Rashi, it says Rav Papa LeBeit Avia Nara Lifto. Where is it? Bei Abasuro. Chamiv haya, right? Vehisi Rav Papa livno achot ishto, right? So that he married his son off to his wife's sister. Right? So that's the interesting shidduch that he was getting for his son. Obviously, I guess they had a number of children spanned over, an age difference. But then he went there to get a shidduch for his son. Azo michtav lo ksubato, right? So he went to, I guess, negotiate the ksuba, what was going to be in the dowry, what was going to be a part of the ksuba. So Shama Yehuda Bar Meremar, right, Nafak Ata. So Rav Yehuda Bar Meremar was there, and he decided, you know, he heard that the negotiations were going to go on, and he decided he wanted to leave. It chazalei kimatel lepitcho. So he saw him when he was going to the door, meaning that he was that he was trying to leave. That Yehuda ben Meremar did not want to stay for this negotiation, for this shidduch. So Amar le Neomar Bahadai. Right. So he said, come along with me. Come inside. Come into Abasura's house with me. So when Rabbi Yehuda ben Meremar was there, he realized that they were going to go for this negotiation, and he decides that he wants to leave. On the other hand, Rav Papa wants him to be there. So at the top of the Gimel of Nalev, he saw that it wasn't comfortable for him to stay. Yehuda ben Meremar said, right? What's the reasoning, right? Yehuda ben Meremar, why don't you want to stay? Say Mishum Damale Shmuel the Rabbi Yehuda Shinina Loti Havi Bevuri Achsanta Filo Mi Bara Bisha the Bara Tava. Don't change inheritance. I mean, don't change the Torah's natural inheritance, which would mean don't favor a son. Don't move inheritance from a son that you think is good to a son, from a son that you think is not behaving well to a son that is behaving well. So the idea my zar enough with me, because you never know what type of children he will have. You never know what the grandchildren will be like. And therefore, don't be someone who moves your Yerusha around in trying to either reward or accommodate those children that are following your way as opposed to the others. Choshe came ibar leparato, and certainly not from a son to a daughter. So what was the fear Yehuda ben Meremar had right now? His fear is that here he's coming to, Rav Papa's trying to make a shidduch with his son, right? And then Abasura's daughter's there, and Abasura's going to put money into the ksubas benin dechrin, and what that's going to do, right, put it into the ksuba, and that will go down, right, to the ksubim dechrin, and that will put more of the inheritance, more of Abasura's inheritance through his daughter rather than through his son, because that's what basically ksubas benin dechrin does, is that it encourages the father-in-law to increase the value of the ksuba that he gives into the ksuba. This is the Takana Durabonan. The Takana Durabonan is what? That you're allowed to put in Ketubas Dichrin in order to encourage, right, the father-in-laws to give money so that their daughters will marry off, right? They'll make a good shidduch. So this is the whole Takana Durabonan. This is what we saw yesterday, right? The memra of Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Shimba Yochai. Amalei, Hani Milei. So he says back to him, Yehuda bar Meimar says, all right, you know, you're right. That even though yesterday we saw that Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said what? Why were they mitaking ksubas b'ninchin? Kadeshi yikpots odom yichtav libito kivno. Right, that a person should give a lot into the dowry in order to encourage others to marry his daughter. So Meimar, Yehuda bar Meimar says back to him, hane mili midate. That's only if he does it without any pressure. Right, lesuye nami. Are you going to say by force? Right? I mean, if he's under pressure, who says that that's really the case? So he's I'm not saying to you to come along and pressure him to make a bigger dowry. This is what he's saying to you. This is what Rapapa is saying to Yehuda bar Meimar. He's saying, you just come with me. Just, you know, come along with me. Oh, well, don't ask you. You just come in with me to the negotiations and sit on the side quietly, but don't force him. Right, Kamino. So I'm like, if I come in, it's as if there's force being applied. Because I'm such a, you know, a big guy or a respected person, he's going to feel obligated to give more money into the dowry just because of your presence. So it's as if you're forcing him to give more. So here, he pressured him. Again, remember we had back on Shabbos, the Daf on Shabbos talked about there that if a person, you can force a person to give tzedakah. Right, and there kfiyo, we talked about, well, are you really allowed to be onesh? Are you really allowed to give malchus on a mitzvah of tzedakah? That's what Tosfos asked over there. So Tosfos concluded what? That the force that's being used over there on the daf on Shabbos was what? Kfiyo was kfiyas devorim. That he did it with his, well, one of the answers, one of the four answers Tosfos gives is that he forced him, he encouraged him or he persuaded him with his words. So also over here, you have to say, here is a proof for Tosfos' position, what? That the kfiya here, the pressure being applied here is through his, right? He convinces him to stay. He didn't, you know, whip him to stay. He didn't give him an onesh in order to stay. He convinced him to stay. Right? So he went in with him, vishtik, and he sat there silently. Yotiv sabar hahu, or so he went in and sat alongside. So a sabar ihu, this is the gears at the back, mirtach rotach, that he was upset. Well, as sometimes, right, silence is more powerful than saying anything. So Yehuda bar Meimar is sitting there silently, and in negotiation, I guess, Rav Abba Sura keeps trying to put more into the dowry, and he remains silent. So Abba Sura thinks he's upset that he's not giving enough money. So he ends up writing in the dowry everything he owns, his entire possessions. Right? So far, Malay, Hashel Ami lo Mishteimar. So after he wrote everything, he was still silent, right? He says, what? Now it's still not enough because you remain silent? And he says, I left nothing for myself. I gave you everything. So he says, Amar Leh. So finally, Yehuda bar Meimar speaks up. And what does he say? Afilu hainami. Dechtavta lo nechli. He goes, if it was up to me, you didn't have to write any of this. You didn't have to put any of this in the ksuba. So then, now Abba Surah is all of a sudden, he's worried. The whole reason that he gave him all of the dowry, or this large dowry, all of his possessions, was because he thought Yehuda bar Meimar was upset. Now, Yehuda bar Meimar says you didn't have to give anything over, right? And what happened? What does he say? He says, oh, you really didn't have to do that. So he says, Amalei hashtanami ahadarbi. He goes, I'm going to take it back. I'm going to retract what I gave in the ksuba. That's what he says to Yehuda bar Meimar. He says, I'm going to retract what I gave. I only gave it because of you, and you really didn't care. So I'm going to reject it. Says Amalei Shavi Nafsha Chadrona Lo Kamino. He goes, I told you that I didn't need you to give all this, but I also didn't tell you to be a person who retracts his word, right? You can't go back on what you did. If you already gave your word and you established this is what it is, the amount that you're going to give, you can't go back on it. So Abba Surah is stuck now. He gave all his possessions over, and basically the fear that Yehuda bar Meimar had really came to fruition, which is what he was afraid that if he showed up to the negotiations, it would cause pressure on the, right, on the in-laws, on the father of the bride, and that's exactly what happened. Because he was there, the father of the bride ends up giving all his possessions into the dowry, and of course, to Rapapa's son's benefit, that it went that way. And that's why he at first wanted to leave, and Rapapa, of course, wanted Yehuda bar Meimar to be there because it was to his advantage in the negotiation. All right. Little story back, Ketubat bin Dichrin, right? So just a little a side story here. All right. Boy, Rav Yemar Saba, Mirav Nachman. So now what happens, this is a case, this is a new sugya, but what happens if the woman, right, sells, gives away, does something with her ksuba? Right, her ksuba is a monetary obligation, right? So now, if she does sells or gifts that monetary obligation to someone else, then what happens to all the additional rights that come with a ksuba? For instance, ksubas bedin different, which is a, right, it's an extra right that's added on by the chachamim on top of the ksuba. Does that right able to survive a transaction? Or is that only because the whole point of the dowry is to keep it, have the father of the bride give a bigger dowry? And here, when she goes and sells her ksuba, right, she's showing that that's not valuable to her.
When you ask, does it survive, does that mean does it survive for her even if she sells it and transfers it? Does it transfer or get sold?
I guess the question is both, but more importantly to her. The right remained to her, because meaning that there are two possibilities. With the ksuba, right, there are two possibilities. One possibility is that the husband dies. In the case that the husband dies, the woman's entitled to her ksuba, right? So there's nothing to talk about. The other possibility is that the woman predeceases the husband. In that case, the ksuba reverts to the husband. So technically, Minat Torah, that's the end of story, right? The ksuba goes to the husband, there's nothing to talk about. The woman has no rights anymore. The Takanas Chachamim is that even when the woman predeceases her husband, that money will stay with her male children. That's the ksuba has been indifferent. So now, if she goes ahead and does something with that, right, sells the ksuba, right, and then she predeceases her husband, right, in that case, she hasn't sold anything because it's not hers to sell, in a sense, right? It becomes a zero to whoever she sold it to. And now, do her male children still inherit that ksuba through her husband? Right? Because it's an interesting, a general thing. Sometimes in the Gemara, it's interesting seeing the Gemara understood both that, you know, this is like a sugya that involves a financial transaction, like a finance, like an option, you know, plus an actuarial decision. If someone comes to buy a ksuba, right, this person is buying an option on the fact that what? That her husband will predecease her. If she sells her ksuba, the ksuba is only valuable if her husband passes away before her.
Right,
if she predeceases him, the ksuba is worthless. It goes all back to the husband and it's worthless. So she's basically selling an option for the fact that her husband will predecease her. Right, so you have to assess what's the value of this option and make an actuarial decision about how long, who's going to live longer. Is her husband going to live longer or is she going to live longer? And based on that, what's the value of what she sold? But you see that the Gemara understood that, because when the Gemara talks about selling a ksuba in this case, they understand that the value is not the full value of the ksuba. You don't sell it that. They sell it at a discounted value for the option of the husband predeceasing the wife. So it's always, I think, just interesting that the Gemara had understood these. They don't term them in financial terms, but it's clear that the Gemara understood that the transaction had to take into account both the option, because there's two possibilities, plus the fact that, you know, there are different lifespans and different possibilities about who would die first. So it's just a sidebar, just an interesting thing that you can learn.
An option involves the option to exercise.
Right.
This is more like a debt security, no?
This is, right, you're buying the future, right, if in an option you're buying it if it only crosses, right, a certain strike price if something is triggered, right? Right, so yeah, there are. So over here too, I think there's a trigger, right, that'll set it up. Yeah, it's not perfectly like an option you see in the market, but again, the idea that there's two possibilities, right? An option suggests that either it'll be valuable or be worthless, right? And that's also over here. The two options are the possibility that it's worthless, the ksuba, or that it has value to it.
It's a derivative product.
Right. So here. All right, so this is the question of the Gemara. So, Baya Minei Rav Yemer Savim Rav Nachman. Machra Ketuba to the Bawa. She sells her ksuba back to her husband. Right? So her husband an interesting transaction. Her husband's buying back the rights of the ksuba. Right? Yeshla Ketuba has been indichrin. Oeinla. Right? Ksuba has been indichrin. Does her right to her male children to inherit the ksuba, does this survive this transaction? Say, Amar Le Rava, Viti Bayilach Mochelet. Why do you have to say that? What only in a case of a sale that you question, right? That whether it survives. What happens if she doesn't even sell it? What happens if she forgives it? Right? There's no transaction, and then she forgives it. So I'm like, I'm worried about selling it. Even though you can say what, that there was a possibility she was under pressure. She was under monetary pressure. She needed a liquid fund, and therefore she sold her ksubot. Right? So that you could suggest that what? It's as if you're hitting her with a whip that has a metal tip on it. Meaning that when someone is under monetary pressure, they make decisions, right? They're under such pressure that they make decisions that aren't necessarily the best. Right? She's selling her ksuba, which is necessarily in her best interest. Mochelet mi boy. You're asking me, why don't I worry about forgiving the loan? Because when she's forgiving the loan, she's not under forgiving the ksuba, she's not under pressure to forgive it. So what was it? The Havamino, right? When Rova asks the question, right, what does he think? What does Rova think? Rova thinks that mochelet, forgiving the loan, which is a much more common practice than selling, right? Then, why don't you ask the question in that case? If you look in Rashi explains the two cases. Because when she sells the ksuba, right, then what happens? She gets benefit. She gets a monetary benefit from selling the ksuba. So Rova would think, what if she sells it?
Maybe then she doesn't get the extra.
She doesn't get the extra right of ksuba midikhin. But if she had forgiven, then maybe she still retains that right because she didn't get any monetary benefit from the forgiveness. That's what Rova asks the question. When Rova asks the question, he goes, why did you ask about selling? Why didn't you ask about forgiving? Because forgiving maybe is the case where we would be more makil with her because there she got no benefit from forgiving it. On the other hand, no. So what is when, after Rova poses that question, right, so Rav Yemar Saba comes back to him and says, no. That's not my question. The way I look at the question is like this. What? Because a sale is done under duress. And therefore, maybe her right would survive that duress. But when she forgives it, that's a choice she made. She made that choice. Maybe she there would definitely forfeit all her rights. So therefore, that's why I pose my question with a sale rather than a forgiving the loan.
We're also making an assumption that selling it is under duress. I mean, it's right. Probably more obvious that isn't Gemara saying that happens, but
there's a possibility where she could sell it not under duress, but the Gemara's suggestion is why would she? Meaning that you never again.
I guess also if she sells it, then they can't stay together anymore because there's no ksuba, right?
Not necessarily, because she's selling the right to ksuba. That the ksuba still exists. I mean, like, even if she she sold it to a third party, not to her husband, right?
Right.
She's still allowed to remain married to her husband because she's only sold the monetary rights to the ksuba. She has not. She hasn't upended the ksuba itself.
But isn't the monetary piece? It's a requirement. It's one of the requirements of the ksuba.
Right. Well, the tnai based in what was that? Shalotia kala beinav, right? Lahotzia, that it will not be easy for him to divorce her. So if she sells it to a third party, I think you have less of that because then he still has to pay out the ksuba, so he still has that monetary force against him. If she sells it back to him, I think maybe your question exists, which is then then it's he's bought his right to divorce her without any monetary restraint, right? So there you have the question. So then you either have to say that the Gemara is going according to Rabbi Huda, who says you can't set up a ksuba like that, or maybe even according to Rabbi Meir. Tosfos, again, back at that Mishnah, suggests that maybe according to Rabbi Meir, maybe if she just gives a receipt, I mean, the ksuba stays in force and she just gives a receipt, then the ksuba is still in force. All right, so those are the two possibilities. All right. Amarovo Pshita Li, so he says it's simple to me. I mean, it's obvious to me. My time is Zuzan Tzua. So here, he says it's clear to me if she sells her ksuba to a third party, that her ksuba's been din nichron, the rights to that the ksuba go to her sons, if she predeceases her husband, still survives. So that's clear. Why? Because there, she certainly did it under monetary duress. There's no reason she would sell it to a third party unless she's under monetary duress. She forgives the ksuba to her husband, then she loses all rights. Right, my time. Achulei achilta. When she forgave the ksuba, she forgave all her rights to the ksuba. She wasn't under any duress, right? And the fact that she's mochel the ksuba plus anything associated with the ksuba, any of her rights associated with it. So by Rava. So the question that he had, the Rava has is mocheret ksuba saw the bala. She sells the ksuba to her own husband. K'mocheres lacherim dami. Do we make it like she sold it to a third party? Or k'mocheles the bala dami? right? Or is it more like that she forgave to her husband, right? If she's selling it to her husband for money, it seems a little strange, right? Versus if she's selling it to a third party for money. Or is it more similar to what? To the fact that she forgives it to her husband. So, Boter, the boy, Hadar Pashta. After he asked the question, he had the answer. That it's similar. When you sell, anytime there's a sale is done most times here where you're taking less than the full value or less than the full value of her rights, that's a duress. And therefore, when she sold it, she simply, sold the monetary rights. She did not sell her other rights that are in the ksuba, like ketubas binin dechrin. Meitiv rav ida bar avin. Meita. So what this is the case? This is the case back in Yevamos. Right? We had this case in Yevamos. This is a woman whose husband went to Medina Sayam. One aide came back and said that her husband passed away. Based on that aide, she goes ahead and marries. Right? So she marries again. And then her husband shows up. Right? So what was the mission over there said that she loses everything. Basically, her children are from both husbands. Everything, basically, she loses from both sides, everything. So that's what it says. Ein yorshin shelze, meitza, ein yorshin shelze, ein yorshin shelze, yorshin ketubata. Ketuba goes to neither of those, of her children from either, her sons from either of those two marriage. So Gemara says, v'avina v'ketubata ma'avito. What ketuba does she have? Right? Here, she's totsi v'ein l'ketubasa, right? That's the Mishnah says over there, that she's divorced, and she loses her ketuba. So why are we talking about a ketuba if she lost her ketuba? But we're talking about ksuba's benin dechrin. You're right, she lost her, forfeited her rights to her ksuba, but maybe they should still go to her children, meaning that the husband now gets the value of the ksuba, but maybe that value should now be passed down to her male children. But am I? Hachanami lema yetzer ansa. Why does she lose her rights to the ksuba's benin dechrin? Over here we said when she sells her ksuba under duress, we say what? The duress was enough to say that she only sold the monetary rights, but her rights to the ksubas b'din dechrin survived. So why don't we say the same thing here? When she went and remarried, she wanted a husband. Right? She was lonely, she wanted a husband. Her yitzer pushed her, even though she was positive that her husband had passed away. Nevertheless, she went in and married, so she was under some sort of duress as well. So that duress should also allow her ksubas b'din dechrin to survive. Mar says, Asim kansu de kansu rabbana. No. Over there, we're not talking, the duress is not the issue over here. The Gemara over there uses the term, right? Achmire v'sofo, they were very machmir in the end, and that's why they were makel in the beginning. To believe in Edechad, in that case, they were makel in the beginning, because so they were machmir in the end, so that she would be medayik, and make sure that it's really true. That she wouldn't make a decision unless she was absolutely certain. So the whole point of the Knas is to ensure that her decision up front is made well. If we say that the Knas doesn't exist, then she will be less discerning about making that decision to remarry up front. So it says that's a different case. Okay, Yotiv Rabin Bar Chanina Kamed Rav Chista, Yotiv Kamar Mishmed Rav Elozer. So he was sitting, Rabin Bar Chanina was sitting before Rav Chista. Mochelet Ketubata LeBala Ein La Mizonot. Right, someone who what is Mochelet forgives her ksuba to her husband. She is no longer entitled to Mizonot. Meaning that if he predeceases her and she's still at the estate, she has now forfeited her rights to those mizonos. I'm like, Ilav de Kamartli Mishmei de Gavaraba. He says, if you had not said this over from a great person, meaning from Rabbi Elazar, Avamina Lach Meshid Ra Takatova Lo Tamush Rami Beito. Someone who pays bad back for good should never, bad will never leave his house. I mean, that's just not the right thing to do. What, he's going to end up, she's going to be an Almana, and now she won't, right, she'll have nothing. She sold her ksuba. Plus, she won't have mizonos, and she'll be basically out of luck, right? So Yotiv, Rav Nachmon, right? But that might be again. That might be different because the mizonos, her rights to mizonos, are only we saw in the Mishnah before. Only if she does not take delivery on her ksuba. So over here, when she sold the ksuba, and someone else is going to take the value of the ksuba, right? Or mochelet, she forgave her ksuba. So therefore, she's what? She no longer has that monetary right to take her ksuba out of the estate. So since she no longer has the right to take that monetary value out of the estate, she also is no longer entitled to mizonos. Whereas by ketuba's been indifferent, when she sells that right, she sold a monetary right, but the right for ksuba's been indifferent is not really dependent on her actually, right, on her actually collecting the ksuba, because it's really when the ksuba remains in the estate, right? So it's almost the opposite case. All right. Yotiv Rav Nachman, Ve'ula, Ve'avime Bar Rav Papi. So you have sitting down, you have Rav Nachman, Ula, and Yimimber for a puppy. Yati Rav Chir Ba'ami Gabayu. And Rav Chir Ba'ami was sitting by them. So just in general, Tosfos points out in other places that whenever the Gemara says that there are a bunch of people sitting and then singles out one person, that's because that person's going to say a chiddush. That person's about to say something, right, that's important. Ata Ugabra the Shiva Rusato. So in case what? This person was engaged. We use it loosely, the term engaged, that he was neras, right? And then his wife passed away. So Amrlei Zilkover or Havlak Subasa. Take a choice. Either bury her or pay her her ksuba. Meaning give the ksuba to her Yorshim, who then will go and bury her. That's because that was one of the Tachanas Chamim said Kvura was Tachas Ksubasa. Right? That was the. So Amrlehu. So because when she predeceases him, she loses her ksuba, right? So the Chamim established that when she loses her ksuba for that, she gains the right to be buried properly by her husband. All right, that's what Rashi suggests over here. Amrlehu Rav Chiya Tanina. Right, so Rav Chiya. Right, again, we said Rav Chiya is the one here who's going to speak up and say something. So Rav Chiya says back to them. Right, Tanina Ishto Arusa. If he's married, if he's engaged to a woman, I mean, again, this is kiddushin today without nisuin, right? Lo onein, velo matamila. If he's he's not an onein for her, and he's not matamila. If he's a kohen, he's not matamila. She's not a relative, one of the seven relatives that he's matamila for. If she was married, then he would be matamila, right? Over here, he's not matamila. Chin he, lo onenet, she is, if he predeceases her, if he dies before they get married, then she is not an onenet, velo matamila. And she is not mitame him, meaning that she's not obligated to be mitame for him. A woman, a kohenet, has no obligation not to become tame, right? It's only a kohen that has the obligation not to become tame. So here, when it says lo mitame lo, means that she's not obligated. I mean that she can if she wants to, because it's a choice, but she's not obligated to take care of him. Meta, if she dies in a yorsha, he does not get the dowry. Because the dowry is only once he does nisuin. I mean that the dowry is dependent. Meaning that the father-in-law only gives over the money to the husband once the nisuin are consummated, right? Mate who, if he dies first, gova ksubasa, right? Then she gets her ksuba, meaning because that he predeceased her. That ksuba is given at the time of, that's the document that's given, right? At the time, it's given at the time of erusin, dami kedushin, and therefore he's obligated to pay out the ksuba if he dies before her, right? It's a time of demes who. I mean, the only reason she's entitled to her ksuba is what? Because he died, right? But if she died, her ksuba basically is worthless. I mean, there is no ksuba because she died first, right? Ha meta hi in la ksuba. If she died, there is no ksuba. If there is no ksuba, then there is no what? There's no kvura. I mean, that you can't suggest. I mean, that the only reason that we would say that is she's entitled, meaning. She was entitled to a burial as if she's entitled to the value of the ksuba. But since over here there is no ksuba, there should be no obligation necessarily to bury her. So my time, Amar Rav Oshia, why does she not entitled to ksuba, right? If she dies, Amar Rav Oshia, she ain't any koreba, right? The language of the ksuba is written like this: Kili shetinasi la'acher. When you marry another person, titli mashakatu laichi. You can take which is rightfully yours. I mean, she's only entitled to ksuba where what? She's only entitled to ksuba where she has the ability to remarry. What are those two cases? Either he died or divorced her. I mean, so the only time that she's entitled to ksuba, according to the way the ksuba is written, is where she has the ability to remarry. That will only be in the case where he dies or he divorces her. Where she dies, that possibility no longer exists. Right, and therefore, what?
So that's what they're saying is a determinant factor with the
kvura.
Right. Sorry, what?
With the not having the that it's no ksuba, so it's no kvura.
Right, because he's not being yorish.
So
he's not being yorish anything from her. Meaning that the basically if. If she's entitled to a ksuba, right?
She's entitled to
a
kvura.
Right, then she's entitled to a kvura because when the husband gets, basically when she dies first, the husband gets to keep the ksuba. Right, she had a ksuba that entitled her to 100 mana.
Right.
When she dies, basically the husband's getting that money back.
Right.
Right, so when the husband gets that money back, then he has to bury her. So over here in the case, so we have to have a case where she would have been entitled to her ksuba, right? And if she was entitled to her ksuba,
that means that he died first.
Right, he died first. Then she would be entitled to a burial, right? Because
right.
Because so, he's gaining something. So that's what Rashi says over here. Chain on Yikori, but if you look at the last Rashi, kacha yokotvi mishtar ksuba, so hilchach, kozman shlo meis, lo nitgarsha, as long as he didn't die, right? Or lo nitgarsha, did divorce, or lo nishtabid lo. Lo yoresh mena klum. He's not obligated to mean, like he has no shibut to her, and he's not inheriting anything from her because there's no, right, there's no real, there's no obligation of ksuba. Since there's no obligation of ksuba, there's no obligation on his part. He didn't gain anything. Since he didn't gain anything, right?
Right, so it's not okay. A case anymore of how we started this of Nisun versus Erison, or Erison versus Nisun.
You mean that even in a case of Nisun, right? Oh, that's interesting. Right now, because the way you're saying it, I mean that. We started out.
We started saying that if they were heiress,
right.
If we were in Erusa, but there was not the Nisuin, then what happens in each case of who dies first? That's how we started this. Now we completely changed that.
Right. Yeah, but here it has to do with also with the Nedunya. So if you look at Rashi, Ein Ba Ksuba, somebody, two, four lines up on the bottom. Din ksuba kvurata. Right, so the din, din ksuba is that kvurata tachet ksuba sa, that the kvura is because of her ksuba. The tanya le'el, we have a brace later on, but nesua tanya, right, v'tachet n'dunias beit avia shu yorsha, that since he is yoresh the dowry, v'hacha came into chimeta, when she dies, ain't a yorsha. Right, therefore, Apu nonet chayev the kovra. Then he also, right, is not obligated to bury it. Right, my time. Well, what's the reason? Darmina kimeta b'chayev in la tvias ktuba tikaver b'shul mana my time shu yoresh. Right, so that he should get the because he's yoresh parts of the ksuba. Therefore, what? Therefore, he should be obligated to bury her. Right, but so over here, so I guess it is still a difference between Erusin and Nisuin, because in Nisuin, if she dies out of Nisuin, then he does get the dowry. He gets the entire ksuba. And for that value of the ksuba that he gets, then he has to bury her. But by Erusin, where he is not Yorisher, because the dowry does not go through until Nisuin, right, and therefore he's not gaining anything by being Yorisher, then he shouldn't be obligated on the other side to bury her, because that right is because of Yerusha he gets out of the ksuba. Since Yerusha, the ksuba does not take place in Erisin, right? Therefore, he should not be obligated to bury her. So Amar, so okay. Amar says, "Shouldn't I say this?" Amar lo abaye kiata rabbi. I'm sorry, kiata my rabbi shlokas a rusha shemeta in la ktuba, right? So that a rusha that dies, right? There is no ksuba, meaning that the ksuba does not from two points, right? There's no ksuba in the fact that the husband does not inherit the dowry. Number one. Number two is that if she doesn't have a ksuba, then she doesn't have a right to be buried, right? So those are. So Amarlo Abaye Zil Amarle. So Abaye says, go tell Rabin or go tell Reish Lakish. Shkila Tivutech. Right, take your good stuff. You think you did a great thing by saying this memra. Right, Shadi Achizre. You know, give it out to the as the wild ones, the wild things. Meaning, put it out in the forest. Vartagamar Rabbi Oshia the Shmaita B'Babel. Rav Oshia already said over what you sent here, which was what we just saw before. Rav Oshia said what? Rav Oshia said, "Jainani kora balik shnas lechar tigli mashal ketuv laichi." That the reason that when she dies, there's no ksuba from a rusin, because she's not the ksuba doesn't work, because the ksuba says you have to have the ability to what? To marry someone else, or to divorced, or to if he died, right?
Marry
someone else, and since that's not fulfilled here, there is no ksuba, and therefore there is no Kavura. So he says that he already told us that there's no ksuba because of that, right? So what you're telling us now, that if she's Arusa that dies, there's no ksuba, that we already know from the statement of Rav Oshia. Right? What happens if she has female children? So far we talked about what?
Male
children. Now the female children have the right from the estate to get what? To have their mizonos given out of the estate. Rav Tani ad tilachan the guvrin. In the ksuba he would say what? They have the right to collect until they get married. Okay? But Levi Tani ad tivagrin. No, until they become of age. I mean, once they become of age, then they're no longer ketanot, and therefore they're no longer, they can fend for themselves. I mean, that they're no longer entitled to get mizonos out of the estate. So the Rav, I forgot the bagar. So Rav would say, if she's not married and she came of age, she's still entitled to mizonos. But Levi Avakav didn't see. And Levi's going to say, if she doesn't come of age and she gets married, she's still entitled to mizonos. Doesn't make sense. And either one should be a factor to eliminate her right to getting mizonos in the estate. Ela bagar velo intziv, intziv velo bagar. Right? It doesn't matter. Either if she comes of age and does not get married, or marries and does not come of age, the kuliyama lo plige. Everybody agrees then she's no longer entitled to her mizonos. Ki plige be'arusa velo bagar. What happens if she has not reached the age of bagrus, right? She hasn't reached 12 and a half, but she's engaged to be married at this point. So is it, when does she forfeit her right to mizonos? Is it at the moment that she gets married, consummates the marriage and has nisuin, or even at the time of kiddushin, she forfeits her right? Right? Remember, kiddushin is 12 months prior to nisuin. So generally, we said during that 12-month period, right, she's giving her time to get ready and to prepare for the marriage, and that he's not chayev in her mizonos during that period of time. So now what happens? This is a orphan, right? She's a yosoma because her father had passed away, right? And she's getting an arusa. So now what's going to happen here? That what? Until they become of age or they get married. Tarte? So what do you mean? But you need two? She has to both come of age and get married? No. Hello, O Tavagrun, O Yamtin Zimneon Linsaba. So either it's when they reach age or they get married. Kitznai. So this machlokus between them is the same as a machlokus tanoi. Admataya bat nizonit. Till when does a daughter entitled to get mizonos? Ad shetiyareis. So until what? She gets engaged. Shumra belazamru ad shetivager. Until she comes of age. So Tani Rabbi Yosef. Right, until they are have habaya. Habaya is the term used for tielish, right? And when she that's the term used for kedushim, getting married. See, by the way, habaya de rusin or habaya de nisuin, right? Is it getting married, meaning getting engaged, or getting married? Teiku. All right, so that's the question. That's a teiku. The Gemara leaves it doesn't know what Rabbi Yosef's statement was referring to, a rusa or a nisua. So Rabbi Chista to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Chista said to Rabbi Yosef, "Mishmielach minei to Rabbi Yehuda arutz yesh lamizonos, ain lamizonos." So again, this question again, we're going to continue. What's the who's the halacha like? Is the arutz get mizonos, or does she not get mizonos? So Rabbi Mishma lo shmieli elas misvara leisla. I never heard about what the halacha is, but I'll give you my logic. Says that she should not be entitled. Why? So why do we give her mizonos? Because otherwise, who's going to feed her? She's a katana, and nobody's going to take care of her over here. She's a katana yisoma, not a katana, or a nara. She's not a bogeret. She can't take care of herself. She's not. If she don't give her mizonos, she's going to be in a predicament where she'll have to go around and collect money. Right? So, came into Irsa, lo nechalei letitzel. Right now, no, so there is somebody watching over her. Why? Because once she gets engaged, her future husband, right, when he's not going to want her see her, have to go around and knock on doors and collect money, that she become like a depreciated asset over the time that he's waiting between Kiddushin and Nisuin. He's not going to want to see her, have to go through this process. So what, if he sees that she's not getting mizonos, he'll step up and give her mizonos. So im mishma lo shmielach misvar yisla. He goes, I disagree. He goes, if you didn't hear it, then I think logically she would, she's what? She does get mizonos. Why? Came to Lokimle Bagava, Loshade Zuze Bikti. Right? He doesn't know her. He doesn't know if he's gonna really conclude this marriage, right? This is a new thing for him. He just got engaged. He doesn't know if this is really gonna get to Nisuin. So he's not gonna throw money right out the window. He's only gonna start paying for her mizonos when he knows for sure that he's marrying this girl. Maybe he'll find something wrong in between. Maybe over that year he'll decide he doesn't really want to get married. So he's not going to put his money on the line until he's sure he's getting married. And then again, she's back in that position where what? Nobody's feeding her. She's not getting out of the estate. She's not getting from her future husband. Then she's in trouble. So I think she should get mizonos. So you see what? There's two. From a logical standpoint, there's a stat to say each way. One side to say that she shouldn't get from the estate because her future husband will take care of her. The other side to say no, she should get from the estate because her future husband will not take care of her. So if that's the case, we have no conclusion. Rabbi Kadamre, that it went the other way, that the conversation went the other way. Amalei Mishma Lo Shmieli, I didn't hear what the halacha is. Misvara Yisla. The Misvara is that she should get mizonos from the estate. Why? Since her future husband doesn't know her so well, doesn't know if he's really going to get to Nisuin. Lo Shadi Zuzi Bikti, he wouldn't throw away his money. He won't pay for her until he knows for sure she's his wife. Amalei Mishma Lo Shmielach, Misvara Leisla. Because if you didn't hear this from the Misora, I think, no, that Misora she shouldn't get. Why? Came into Irsa, lo nechalei titzel. He gave the other side. So the Ikadamre says, what? That he's afraid, Misora, that the future husband will not let her depreciate, meaning that, or go through a situation where she will have to go around and collect money, right? And put her in compromising situations, and therefore he'll pay for the mizonos if we don't give out the estate. So either way, the ikadamri just gives you both tzedin and ends us back at the same problem of teiku. When does it end? Does it end meaning that the machlokas between Rav and Levi about when does the estate stop giving mizonos, right? That we have no conclusion about. So here, again, everybody agrees what? If she marries, then she forfeits her rights to mizonos. And secondly, if she what? Comes of age, she forfeits her rights to mizonos. Both of those are true. The only question is, when she's in Arusa, does she forfeit her right or not? That the Gemara decided that there's no conclusive...
When she's a Nara,
that's Arusa, right, because Bogeret automatically said she's done. Right, she's done already. Alright, so now, Sima, alright, next thing. Bo mi name Rav Sheshes mi ma'enet, yesh la mizonos, ain la mizonos. So what's our case here? Our case here is her father passed away already. Right, so then, when a Yisoma that gets married, right, does not get married midoraisa. Why? Because she's a katana, and a katana cannot be mekabelet kesef kidushin. Right, usually her father would accept on her behalf, and then she'd be married minatoru. So what do we say? The Chum gave the rights to her brothers, right, her mother and her brothers, to marry her off midorabonim. This kidushin derabonim. If she, this kidushin, usually if you have kidushin deoraisa, so what do you need to uproot kidushin midoraisa? You need a get. Right, but the Chavim gave the right to a girl who was married off midrabanan to be mima'enet, right? To reject the marriage, even after she has been married to this individual, when she becomes older, before she becomes a right kedushin d'oraisa. Therefore, she has the right to say I'm efshi, right? That I don't like this guy. So Amar Rav Sheshes, so does this woman, if she's mima'enet, does she get mizonos or not? Meaning that when she rejects the kedushin later on. It's as if she was never married.
Right, so
at this point in time, does she come back to the estate to get mizonos? Right, do you view, basically, what's the real question here? When she is mema'enet, does that mean mikana lahabot? She was married, and here, prospectively, she's no longer married. Right, but once she was married, she's lost her rights to the estate, and now she's out. Or do we say mema'enet is okir kidushin meikara? It's as if she was never married. It was as if, and no kedushin ever took place. No kedushin nisuin ever took place, and therefore she never really left the estate, right? And therefore she's entitled to mizonos. So I'm a little upset. Tinitua, amono beveit aviha vegrusha beveit aviha v'shomeret yamum beveit aviha yesh la mizonos. She gets mizonos. This is an amono, a widow in her father's house, right? A grusha and a divorcee in her father's house, and a shomeret yamum beveit aviha yesh la mizonos. And if she's in her father's house, she gets mizonos. If she's not in her father's house, she doesn't get mizonos. So Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakama. Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakama are basically synonymous. Helalav mima enet ika beinayu. That the difference between them is what? A case of mima enet. The Tanakama suffer isla. The Tanakama suffer, she gets mizonos. Rabbi Yehuda suffer lesla. And Rabbi Yehuda says no. Right, because the Tanakama, we're going to see in a second, let's just explain why this works. So look, if you look in Rashi, a Bevet Aviyah, right, Almona Bevet Aviyah, she is a widow in her father's house. Klomar Minhei Rusin, that she what? She's an Almona. She was not fully married. This is a case where she, let's say her father had married her off, and he was him, De'imin and Asunim, Lamina Yesh Lamizonos. Right, because we know for sure, right above, we said Kula Amai agrees that if she marries Midoraisa with a full Nisuin, she's no longer entitled to Mizonos from the estate. So over here, it must be a case when we say Almano Bevet Aviyah, that she's a widow or a Grusha, this has to be an Almano or a Grusha from what? From the Erusin, from a state of Erusin, not a state of Nisuin. Right, because so therefore, she might still be entitled, because that we said above, we're not sure, but she might still be entitled to mizonos. And again, what's a case of a grusha that is entitled to mizonos? She got divorced from him, and before they paid out the ksuba, he dies. Right? So that, is she entitled to mizonos from the estate from that divorce? Okay, so again, that's the case here. And shomeres yabam, again, is again a shomeres yabam that is minay rusin. Okay, shomeres yabam minay rusin. So does she get mizonos or not? So that's the, he says what? That these items that are pervasive. So we have the machlokes being the Tanakama. So if you look in Rashi, Tanakama sover me'enet isla, v'achi kamar, amama v'veit aviyah, b'hu adinna me'enet, dein kan nisuin, dakritinu. So just like all these cases of Erusin, she's entitled to, so too over here, when she's me'enet, he's also entitled. Why? Because she was okir, the nisuin, mi'ikara. So as if there was never any suin. That only if she was always in her father's house is she entitled to mizonos. But once she leaves her father's house, once she has nisuin, that's it. There's nothing to talk about, even though it was only nisuin derabanan. Once she leaves, she's done. Right? That's the machlokas. Rabbi Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Right? By Rish Lakis, but yivama. Right? So a daughter of a yivama. Yesh la mizonos, oh ain la mizonos. So what happens in a case of a yibum? What happens in a case of a yibum? A yibum, the brother marries the woman. And she, what? She's entitled to her ksuba, but her ksuba is only on her first husband's possessions. Meaning that she's entitled to collect her ksuba out of her first husband's possessions. So now, the tnai ksuba that the girls eat out of the estate, does that apply to the new husband, to the second husband? When the second husband takes her as a wife, really her ksuba is on the first husband, her first husband's, right, estate. So is she only entitled to mizonos at her first husband's estate? Or when the second... when the brother marries her and takes over that obligation, does he also take over the obligation that she will be fed out of his state? Right? So Gemara says, Kevin Damar Mar Ksubas al Nichsei Bal HaRishon Leisla. Maybe because her Ksuba really only has, right, she has rights in her Ksuba only from her first husband's estate, so too the Mizonos will only be fed out of the first husband's estate. If there's no estate, then she will not get, his daughter will not get out of the second husband. But this is an interesting daughter, right? The daughter is born to whom? Daughter is born to this brother. The Yavam who married her has this daughter. So it's his daughter, right? But the obligation of the ksuba is coming from the first husband. And therefore, this daughter may not have a right. Because the wife and that right of the ksuba comes from the husband. It's an amazing situation where it's his own. It's really his daughter, right? And yet, maybe she is not entitled to that. Oh, Zilma. So what's the possibility? What happens if the first husband has no possessions left? So the chavim where goes there, even though he's not technically entitled to the she's not entitled to ksuba from the to collect out of the second husband's possession. Nevertheless, the chavim made it that way. Why? She goes to he had kalamena to divorce her. I mean, the whole point of ksuba is to make sure that he doesn't just dump her out, right? If you say that the first husband had no possessions for her to collect her ksuba from, then the second husband's going to have no incentive to keep her as a wife. So chavim said, if the first husband has no possessions, the second husband takes over that obligation. Since he takes over that obligation, so too, he'll take over the obligation to what? To feed the daughter. If there's no money to feed the daughter, he'll also take over the tnai ksuba. Just like the ksuba would move over to him, so too that tnai ksuba will turn over. Tosus points out, if you just look first line of Tosus, bas yavama, nira to yavma atzma pshita delesh lamizonos. The gavi didor mina tnai ksuba ksuba. By her, it's clear that she gets the mizonos, right? Because if she has a ksuba, and the first one has an estate, the first husband has an estate, then she'll get her mizonos out of that. The first husband has no possessions, then she gets her ksuba out of the second estate. And therefore, since it's a tnai ksuba that she can stay and eat mizonos out of the estate, so just like she can collect her ksuba from the second guy, she can collect her mizonos. When the first guy doesn't have, she gets from the second. Ababas mi baile, ialima kamosa. Does she have the same status as her mother? Maybe tnai ksuba ksuba. That condition of the ksuba is like her mother's. Going to leisla the rishon, right? Right. As long as the first husband doesn't have it, right? So that's one possibility. If you skip down a couple lines in Tosfos, so Tosfos over here says that when the first husband doesn't have, right, then there's no question because mimanav shach she'll get it, right? That the daughter will get it because since the ksuba moved over to the second guy, then the mizonos also move over. The question is, that even when the first husband has possession, we ask, even though the yavama for sure will get mizonos out of the first guy's estate, ben islay, ben lesle, could he parish bebito? Right? So Tosus says, you could phrase the question otherwise. According to the first way Tosus is learning is that the yavama gets her mizonos no matter what, because either she gets her ksuba from the first estate or the second estate, and whichever estate she would get her ksuba from also feeds her mizonos. Right? The question is by the daughter. In the case of the daughter where the first one does not have possessions, if the first one has possessions, the daughter can eat out of those possessions because that's part of the ksuba from the first individual. So the only question is by the second one. If there are not enough possessions to pay out the ksuba, from the second husband, from the brother, then does she get, is she entitled to mizonos out of the second one's estate? Does her tnai ksuba move over with the ksuba like her mother? That's the way Tosus learns it the first way. The second way Tosus is learning is no. The question is really about if the first husband has enough possessions. Again, the Yavama gets either way. What happens if the first husband has enough possessions and she's going to collect her ksuba or her mizonos out of the first husband's estate? Right now, does the daughter, can she collect out of the first husband's estate? Why would we think otherwise? Because what is it? What's the condition of the ksuba? What's the tnai ksuba? The tnai ksuba is that daughters that I will have with you will eat out of my estate. Whose daughter is it? It's not the first husband's daughter. It's the second husband's daughter. Why is it the second husband's daughter? Because it was Yibum, and that's where the daughter is born to the second husband. Since the daughter was born to the second husband, maybe the obligation from the first ksuba is not in effect, because it's not his daughter. And that's what the question of the Gemara is. The question of the Gemara is, what, since if, does her tnai ksuba move over? Meaning that since she was, you know, since this is really a continuation of the first marriage, and her ksuba is collected out of the first estate, the tnai ksuba for her daughter will also be collected out? Or do we say no? Since what? Since when she doesn't have enough money from the first, it goes over to the second ksuba. Maybe also her. He shouldn't be obligated to pay for it because she can collect out of her father's estate. Meaning that she doesn't have to pay for it. All right, we'll stop here. I will point out just one thing in Tosos. Amano bebesavia, that the Rashi explained that was from the Erusin. Rabbeinu Tam rejects Rashi's pshat and says that it was really an almana from the Nisuin. Which is an amazing thing, that she'll be an almana from Nisuin, and she'll still go back to Beis Avia, right? Amar Beis Avia, she nisuav nit amon ugarsha b'chayavia. V'haynu b'Beis Avia, yesh la mizonos. Hol shit amon ugarsha, kati lo meitza av. Lo ban zman chiv mizonos, v'lo mifsed mide. So what happens? It's a case where her father is still alive, and then she gets divorced from Nisuin, and she goes back to Beis Avia. So, and then he says, then her father passes away after that. Right, and therefore, is she entitled to mizonos or not? The Tosfos rejects it. It says Rashi says better because we never heard of such a thing. Once she has nisuin, she doesn't have rights to go back. Her father has lost any connection to her. She becomes yusoma v'chaya aviha, and there's no way that she goes back. So how could you set up the case like that she has some rights in the mizonos, and they reject? But just so you know, the Rabbeinu Tam learns the Gemara slightly differently than Rashi.